For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. Wow. Here we are. There are many more people than I thought would be here on such a nice day. This is fantastic. I'm Douglas Floyd. I'm the board president and the administrative director at Ancient Dragon. And this was my turn to lead an all-day sitting. So some of us are doing all-day sittings, and we're happy that so many additional people were able to come to join us for what our founder, Ehe Dogen, would call identity action, where we acknowledge that we are here together, and our action is a reflection of that. What I want to talk about today is some aspects of one of Dogen's essays called Bodhisattva Shishobo. I've circulated copies, not that you're going to need to refer to them now. I thought it would be nice for you to be able to take them home. So Bodhisattva Shishobo has a number of translations, and this translation by Shohaku Okumura and Alan Sanaki, he translates a title as The Bodhisattva's Four Embracing Actions. And it's had a number of different translations to try and pick up different aspects of what Dogen is talking about in the essay. So the four aspects of a bodhisattva's living spirit and four aspects of bodhisattva's social interactions and four aspects of bodhisattva's regulation of society. All of those are things that are addressed. But fundamentally, what the essay is about is about the transformative power of activities of selfless generosity that consist of giving, generous giving, kind speech or kindness generally, benevolent activity, and what Dogen calls identity action, which also might be called sympathetic or empathetic activity. And in a way, Dogen is celebrating this in a way that sort of harkens back to the message he has in Fukan Zazengi and Bendo Wa and so many other places about Zazen and how Zazen and what we are doing in Zazen, what you have just been doing in Zazen, is so different from the way Buddhism had been thinking about awakening and the life of awakening. So, you know, in classical Buddhism had seen the path of a bodhisattva, a person who is working toward enlightenment in order to liberate all beings as an activity that lasts a very long time, even many, many lifetimes, and in which the bodhisattva is cultivating healthy conduct to develop good karma. So by giving to monks, and then monks preaching the Dharma to lay people, and then developing, practicing ethical conduct and following the precepts and developing patience, all of that, developing good conduct so you could really get to the meat of the life of a bodhisattva, the life of a Buddhist, which was diligently practicing meditation, which would stabilize your mind and give rise to prajna and an awakening that would allow you to see, to eliminate and see through the defilements, afflictions of our life, the illusions and the fear and distress that characterize so much of our life. And Dogen worked from strands of thought that had developed in East Asia, especially in China, and the idea that we are already inherently awakened, so that we don't actually develop some kind of mind, an awakened mind. We don't develop prajna, but we express our awakening in activity. And that one, the most common way we do that is during zazen, that just sitting upright without moving and setting aside our thinking and feeling and delusions to be right here is itself the actualization, the realization of our awakened mind that is not separate from the awakening of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas. So in Bodhisattva Shishobo, Dogen talks about the power of generosity and bodhisattva activity right now. You know, as I was saying, in classical Buddhism, a bodhisattva practices over lifetimes and is developing this awakening that's going to happen in order to have the insight and the powers and skillful means to preach the Dharma to other beings and bring them to awakening and liberate them. But Dogen is taking a different approach. He's saying, just as in Fukan Zazengi, he's saying, wait, this ability to transform yourself, transform other beings, bring about their awakening, and to benefit them is something that happens right now. We can do this right now. It's something we can experience, both through giving and kindness and benevolent activity and through this identity action. So, in fact, he says multiple times during the Bodhisattva Shishobo that this generous activity, selfless activity that expects no reward or benefit from helping others is the whole of the Dharma. It is the vow and the practice of bodhisattvas, and that it is something you can do right now. That the power is such that just by giving, freely giving a gift to someone, or freely performing some action of benefit to them, plants seeds that can transform their lives. The recipient of the gift or the beneficiary of this benevolent action, that it transforms their lives, that activity that the bodhisattva performs plants seeds in the life of the recipient that take root and bear fruit all across the life of the recipient, but also then gets passed on as the recipient in turn transmits benevolence and generous activity to other people so that the fruit of your generous activity spreads throughout the human world and beyond. So this is especially the case, he emphasizes giving. And he takes a different approach to it because certainly giving is has been an important part in Buddhist teaching about the life of awakening from very early on. So for example, the Bodhisattva practices, the paramitas, which are sometimes called perfections and sometimes are called transcendent practices. So there's giving, ethics or precepts, patience, diligence, enthusiasm in your practice, meditation, and prajna. But giving in that traditional teaching is different from what Dogen's talking about. That traditional teaching is that lay people give money and food and robes and other things to monks, and that creates good karma for them and lays a foundation for their own awakening down the road. And the monks primarily respond by giving the Dharma to lay people and to each other. Dogen is talking about something completely different. It could be anything. It could be something as small as a penny or a stalk of grass, giving whatever you have to someone to meet their needs. But it is true giving. It has to be selfless giving. It is giving freely without expectation of reward, without expectation of gratitude or that someone will like you or that you'll get a great reputation or that you'll exercise some control or place some conditions on it. He talks about giving has to be like as if you were giving someone flowers that are growing on a distant mountain, or you're giving someone treasure that you accumulated in a past life but you don't have now. So you're giving something and it's out of your hands. You're trusting the treasure that you have, the things that you have, to someone else. And you're trusting the Dharma. The Dharma can be a gift. So giving, that can be this transformative giving, can be giving giving the Dharma, teaching the Dharma, but very much giving things, anything. Not just giving to monks, giving to everyone. And the interesting thing is that he is clear that this giving doesn't just lay a foundation for you, but it does transform you to give in this way, and it transforms the recipient. He says that in that respect, giving the Dharma can be like giving a thing, and giving a thing can be like giving the Dharma. Because when someone comes face to face with someone having performed this generous act and done something freely for them and to help them, or gives them something, it transforms their lives and opens the possibility that they themselves will become capable of this free giving, this generosity and selfless action, just as if you had taught them the Dharma. So as long as you do this free giving, as you do this selfless act for the benefit of others, you know, the size of the gift, the importance to the recipient of this selfless action does not affect whether there is at least some merit involved, that there's some goodness that is planted in your life and in the life of the recipient. And this is true, sort of the realm in which giving can take place is not limited to the relationships between lay people and monks, that your giving could be, for example, building a bridge or building a boat that's going to serve as a ferry to help people, or earning a living, or even, he says, managing a business. That as long as your aim in performing an act of generosity is to benefit the other person, and that you're not doing it with a hope or expectation of gain, that itself is the kind of benevolence, that bodhisattva benevolence that he's talking about. So the other thing that he mentions is that when he talks about identity action, that's something that the name itself doesn't seem to mean too much. But what he's talking about is an action which sees other people as, that identifies with other people. And that changes, he says, from time to time and under different circumstances. So he says that, for example, Shakyamuni Buddha, when he came to this world, he appeared as a person and he taught to people because he identified with people in other worlds. If he went to one of the heavens, for example, he would appear and teach as one of the inhabitants of those other realms. And so our activity springs from that sense of there being an us. It's no longer me and you out there, and I'm doing something for you, or I'm acting in a way to make sure that you don't jeopardize my sense of my identity, sense of who I am, or threaten me in any way. It's us, and so you act on that basis. And that identity action, unifying yourself with things, is the basis for the harmony of friendships and of a peaceful, healthy society. Beyond that, other than saying, well, it's just a really good thing to help people out, along the lines of Fukan Zazengi, he says that identity action and kind speech and generously giving, he says, creates connections with the object of your behavior. To create one single suchness between the bodhisattva, between you and the recipient of your benevolence or your generosity. And I think that what he's saying is, I don't think it's quite translated correctly. It's not that you create the connection. It's that you are actualizing the connection. You are expressing the connection in this generous activity directed to other people. And in that sense, just like in the case of Zazen, we are realizing our Buddha nature. We are realizing the undivided, interconnected, mutually conditioned, mutually supporting nature of the world that embraces all of us, both a giver and a recipient. So that this activity is an expression of this, the great emptiness, but in the expression in these concrete entities is what we would call the activity of suchness or thusness. And we run into this during our meal chants that we chant in connection with our ceremonial meals during all-day sittings and sessions, right? Where the idea is that in enjoying this meal and acknowledging our relations with the people who've brought us the food, whether we are worthy of the food, what we hope for, that we're going to use this food for the benefit of other beings, that we realize the emptiness, the inseparability the undivided nature of this embracing activity of giver, receiver, and gift. Right? This is something that in this activity, all of these activities actualize the fundamental point, right? This is the translation of Genjo Koan, that in this lived moment, this action together, this that is not based on our of generosity and love, if you like, that's not based on our attempts to gain something or protect us from something out there, is the expression under these circumstances of the lived reality, which is part of the all-embracing Tathagatagarbha. That's the expression of our Buddha nature. So, you know, does someone have the clock? Can you show that to me? So, when you talk about bodhisattvas and great generosity and seeds of goodness that are planted, that it extend through lifetimes and throughout the realms of humans and gods and heavens, that sort of thing, all this can sound very abstract. You go, well, is this real? And I think the point is, Dogen is very real. He's always concrete. That sitting right here is the realization of our Buddha nature. And these acts of generosity that we experience in our lives and that we perform ourselves are things that we run into all the time. So I'll get a little anecdotal and say that, for example, when I was graduating from high school and applying to colleges and got accepted to colleges, I did not get enough financial aid to let me go. And two brothers in Montgomery, Alabama, who operated a cotton classing business, spoke to me and said, well, what are you going to be doing next year? And I said, well, we'll see. I didn't get enough financial aid to go here. And they said, well, we'll see about that. And they created a scholarship so that I could go to college. There were no conditions. No expectations. And more commonly, about 5 years ago, I was walking down Michigan Avenue when my meniscus tore. Just walking along the street. And my reaction was what you would expect was, oh my God! That was the most excruciating pain I had ever had. And when I said that, a crowd of six or eight people clustered around me. They just rushed to see if they could help, if there was something wrong with me. That sort of uncalculated offer to help. And finally, I remember that when my son was in high school one time, we were in front of our house, and someone who was wheelchair-bound had gotten stuck in a very busy street, and he was going down the street in his wheelchair in very busy traffic, unable to get out of the street up onto the sidewalk because there were no gaps in the curb. And my son saw him and just immediately went over and pulled him out of the street and up onto the sidewalk, which I thought was wonderful. Certainly those seeds of goodness have stuck with me and have been an inspiration for me in acting for other people. And concretely, in my life, which is precisely what Dogen is talking about, that expression of that relationship with the other person, in acknowledging that, we are acknowledging our unity our inseparability and our mutual support and reliance upon other people. That is what Buddha nature is. Dogen even slips in as an aside that receiving gifts is the same sort of activity as giving the gifts, that it is the experience of that sympathetic together action, that us activity that is placing us in the world, so that under those circumstances it is fair to say, I am not practicing generosity. Generosity is practicing me. I am being generous. I'm being kind. I'm practicing together action. I am benefiting this person is delusion. That's evaluating, calculating mind. But the activity of giving and receiving for the benefit of others without hope of gain, purely out of sympathy for others and the desire to benefit them, that is Buddha practicing compassion, and Buddha practicing and receiving kindness, and Buddha practicing and receiving identity action. So I'm going to leave it at that and see if anyone has any corresponding anecdotes or thoughts or questions. Thank you. Yeah, a little different spirit, perhaps.
But like I've received, I say probably 90% of the things that I receive, I give away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I receive them with joy and appreciation, and also I think, well, let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, you know, there's something about like the person giving the gift might not like that.
That's true, but that wouldn't have been a bodhisattva gift in the first place, right? I mean, he's clear that...
Maybe it was. Maybe the bodhisattva was giving me something with all their attachment, wanting me to love this gift more than anything in the world. And maybe they became a bodhisattva. Yeah. They have some greed and desire attached to it, but they give it to me. Yeah.
Well...
Great. Thank you so much.
And I think that, you know, I think you're right that you could make a gift as a bodhisattva activity, but later we maybe are not so open to that sort of thing. I remember talking with Reb Anderson about that one time and having a sort of disagreement that you might initiate something with a healthy, awakened mind that maybe moves over into something less than that later. I think that's true. You're right. I mean, I think there could be a bodhisattva gift, and yet someone would say, wait a minute, you gave this away. I mean, they could have relinquished it at the moment of giving. They had no attempt to control what you were going to do with it, no conditions upon what you were going to do with it. It's yours. Do what you like. If it's good and if it benefits you, I'm happy. But then later kind of feel differently about it when you gave it away, re-gifted it. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, we are, you know, one of the things that I think Dogen would be clear about is that our awakening, our realization of our Buddha nature is something that we have to do over and over and over again. It's not like you read sometimes that enlightenment or awakening is an event. And after that, you're done. You're sort of coasting. You've got the answer now, so everything is easy and everything is clear. That's not the way it works.
I'm just this whole regifting Bodhisattva nature, reminded me of a story. I forget if it's in the Lotus Sutra or where exactly, but I'm going to heavily paraphrase. But the Buddha and Avalokiteshvara, or Kanon, are having an interaction. The Buddha really wants to give, or not wants, but is giving this precious, I think it's a, I forget exactly, maybe a bracelet or some sort of jewelry to Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara does not, initially refuses it, and she says, no, I can't take this. I'm Kanon, I don't do that. I can't accept this. And the Buddha is like, way manages to, to discuss this in a very convincing way. It's just very, pure convincing way that convinces Avalokiteshvara to take this priceless jewel. But as soon as Avalokiteshvara gets it, she breaks it in half and immediately gives it to others, just immediately, and sort of embodying this aspect that we can't hold on to anything, but we just immediately give. And I think maybe the nature of the Dharma is regifting. It's just like Dharma regifting itself, like forever, And that maybe that's our kind of enter into this. We're the byproduct of regifting, enter into this dynamic. I always think about that of this just this image of Kanon immediately breaking this priceless jewel and giving it away to others. Just I don't know, it always sits with me and. Maybe embodies that spirit for me.
Excuse me for my contortions. I had a lot of exercise yesterday and my legs have decided to cramp. So does anyone else have any anecdote about the experience of this kind of selfless generosity that they've either witnessed or experienced in their lives? Ishin?
There are a lot of studies that show that even infants and young toddlers will respond with concern when they hear another child crying. And toddlers who have a little bit of agency will often try to come to the aid of that little child and a parent. And it kind of strikes me that babies and toddlers are, that's kind of their first experience in life, is that they cry and someone, tries to do something to help them. So they're well-versed in, what can I, at least, that immediate spirit of, how can I try? How can I help? I'm also, as a psychologist, I'm always mindful of Sigmund Freud saying, there's no true altruism. Because our efforts to do something helpful actually makes us feel good. And that might be something that we could practice with around, giving, is what is it that feels good? Why does this feel good? And maybe part of why it does feel good is that there's some part of us that really is aware of the connection, and doing something to express it maybe just does naturally feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think something like that sounds true to me. Yeah. Along with the self-obsessed stuff that also goes on.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Trying to look good or...
whatever, yeah.
But
there at the same time is that...
Maybe
that benevolence.
Maybe we can look at our multiple motives in giving something.
Yeah. And identifying them as, in a way, removing their hold on us. It's very much like Zazen, right? I mean, when we sit in Zazen and we let the thoughts and feelings come up, there are always going to be thoughts and feelings of, defilements of fear, anger, hate, desire. But that doesn't, we've set them to when we're aware of them, but they are not controlling us. It's a non, I don't know, you could think, oh, what a great person I am to have given this. But if you're aware of that, you can can say, well, no, not it. That's not it. I think that doesn't remove the merit if you're not identifying with that.
You know, it occurs to me, too, that we can have those same hang-ups about being the receiver. You know, I, along with lots of people, find it hard to ask for help. And, you know, we can look at, like, what is it that gets stirred up around receiving help? We only want to receive things under certain conditions, you know, when we feel like we can give something back in return.
Yeah.
And yet sometimes we are the receivers of other people's caring. And, you know, that can be a Dharma gate for us, too.
Yeah, I think sometimes we do want to turn it into a transaction. Someone gave it something to us just to help us, but we feel a sense of obligation. We have to pay them back, and that wasn't why they helped us or gave us something. Our Highness, you were first up here.
Yes, I think Rishon says that not only humans do that. And I saw one time this video about this fish that was out in the water, and his dog was trying to pull water in it, like he knew the animals in the middle of that. And then I saw also in the video where the dog is taking food from the bucket to take it to the fish. And then one of the stories that I think I read was about this parrot, and where he felt the same alarming need that the other bird had, they were separated, and he knew that it was hungry, so he will just give him food. So I think that animals also have that sense. I mean, that there are some stuff that they have that reflects that.
Trees do too.
Trees?
Trees will share their nutrients with other trees.
Jerry.
Giving doesn't work if you don't have a receiver. So, in a sense, this idea that you give without expectation, sometimes the harder part is learning to receive without expectation. To be gracious in what you say. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
When I was probably in high school, I gave my half brother a present, an article of clothing. I can't remember what it was. And the next time that I saw him, when I went to lunch, he said to me, he was wearing a different sweater. He said, "You want my sweater?" I said, "Yes." He said, "This is what I got." I thought that was beautiful because he was saying to me that he trusted that I wanted him to have a piece of clothing that he would like, and he trusted me that he could tell me that honestly. Now, at first, I was taken aback, but then I thought that was really beautiful. I felt that was a beautiful way of receiving my gift.
Well. For Christmas, I got a shirt that was too small and not really to my taste from my son. I hope he had the same spirit when I turned it in for a different kind of shirt that did fit. So, yeah. Chris, did you have another?
Well, I was just going to. I don't know. I can't help myself. Just observations about things, but all of this. What we discuss about the trees feeling the just this need to give and the reminds me of the book The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Logan, where he talks about, you know, they'll just basically exactly what I guess I'm saying, this just sharing that just sort of happens in the and infants and toddlers and other animals all just sort of doing this just sort of as a matter of course. And it reminds me of the phrase that Dogen uses a lot about mutual assistance, that it's just sort of always happening. It's like kind of Uchiyama Roshi talks a lot about this power that animates. So like I can think, but what is it that's powering that? What allows me, the thing that allows me to do this is sort of this thing that's going on. And I think that at least all signs point to this sort of this assistance that just is happening always. And we kind of, it's almost like when we don't get it in our own way, we just kind of commune with this and we just want to do it. I don't know, it's very, I don't know if primordial is the right word, but there's just this kind of, it feels to me that often we have to convince ourselves to do the wrong thing, but we have to convince ourselves to not do the right thing. If, I mean, and the convincing is this like layer over top of just this kind of assistance that just kind of wants itself to happen. I don't know. It's just what I've observed.
Yeah.
Do you
experience something
happening
with you?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're behind the altar, so I couldn't see you. Thank you.
A long time ago, I met a bishop from Africa. I don't remember what denomination. He was in this country on a kind of a fundraiser. And when he received this generous check from someone, he said, "The other side of the golden coin of charity is gracious acceptance." I think that's something.
Yeah. Well, I see from the clock on the floor that it's time to move on to the next activity, so thank you very much.